recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Jack the Ripper. Who was he? And which of all the faces that moved about London's Whitechapel district, which one was his? And why did he feel driven to kill those pathetic drabs with one sweep of the knife you see here?
See, Martin, the outside world offers them fears we could never match. The ovens at Belsen and Dachau have ruined our Chamber of Horrors. People are blasé, sophisticated. They think they've outgrown the need to be frightened. They live in fear day in, day out. It's the world, Martin.
Emma, you down there?
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
Who defended your deeds against the thousands who saw you? And when Mr. Ferguson sold the museum, who spoke up for you? Who wanted you? Me! I was the best friend you ever had. Now, what have you done for me? You've murdered Mr. Ferguson. He was the only man who was my friend. He was my best friend. The books are right. The books are right. You are monsters. You're all of you. You're heartless, heartless monsters.
When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello once again, folks. Yes, we will be talking Twilight Zone. And thank you, Robert, for that excellent opening. That was great. I always like Jim Morrison Doors, so I wasn't expecting that. Yeah.
I can't hear you. I'm doing some shopping here. Get ready for Christmas, though. Oh, okay.
That was a really good opening, though. I enjoyed that. I love the Doors. So I would like to welcome everyone here today. We have quite a few people. Okay, we have guest number 5, and we have Lou, of course, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Robert and Bobby and Dave, and we have Felix from New Jersey here. Haven't seen you in a while. Welcome back, Felix. And yeah, that's it. And we've got a nice little group here today, so I'm glad everyone's here. And yes, Felix says there's always something creepy about wax museums. Well, that's true. There is. There is something creepy. And that's
paddleball people, too. They're real strange, too.
That's right. They are strange.
hitting the little white balls to paddles, you know, in front of wax museums. That's scary.
Oh, this is a great weekend. I mean, this is we're getting close to Christmas, and there's a lot of hustle and bustle with the shopping. Of course, Lou and I were talking earlier. We do most of our shopping online, so we don't deal with the crowds and the lines and the crazy parking and everything.
I can't hear you in the register.
you're in the line at the cash register, right? He's at Walmart. But yes.
Get out of my way. I want that hat.
I'll
for a bowl of soup.
Just slap her and knock her down. yes, well, today's episode is called The New Exhibit, and I'm going to turn it over again to Robert for our opening clip for that.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Martin Lombard Sinescu, a gentleman, the dedicated curator of Murder's Row in Ferguson's Wax Museum. He ponders the reasons why ordinary men are driven to commit mass murder. What Mr. Sinescu does not know is that the groundwork has already been laid for his own special kind of madness and torment, found only in the Twilight Zone.
A madhouse, a madhouse!
And I, you know, this episode is very reminiscent to me, that movie, The Wax Museum. House of Wax. I'm sorry.
House of Wax.
Vincent
Price.
Oh my God, what a great movie. I mean, scary, creepy. I mean, you know, of course the movie's better than this, but this still I think is a great.
Well, the movie was in 3D too.
Yeah, that's right. Awesome movie. But yeah, this is called The New Exhibit, and stars Martin Balsam as Martin Sinescu, who works at the Wax Museum. And his boss and best friend, Mr. Ferguson, he tells him that the museum's going to be closed down. It's going to be torn down, actually, and replaced by a big shopping center or supermarket or something. So Martin, he's very upset about this, and he has one request. He wants to spare the wax figures of Jack the Ripper, Albert W. Hicks, André Désiré Landru, William Burke, and William Hare. Mr. Ferguson thinks about it, and he finally, you know, says okay. And Martin takes them home. He takes the wax figures home, and this is much to the dismay of his wife, Emma. He keeps the figures down in his basement under high air conditioning and constant care. So Emma, she's terrified of them, and, you know, rightly so. She's concerned also by their effect on Martin, and she doesn't know what to do. So she seeks the advice of her brother Dave, and he tells her, shut off the air conditioning. Melt Martin's collection. So she sneaks out of bed one night and goes down to the basement, and she tries to shut off the air conditioner. And the wax figure of Jack the Ripper pivots his knife-wielding hand towards Emma. She screams. And the next And the next morning, Martin discovers Emma dead and Jack's bloody knife in his hand. So, of course, Martin, he gives Jack a little reprimand, you know, gives him a bunch of crap, really, you know, explaining that what he did was wrong. And then he buries Emma's body to conceal Jack's crime. He buries her in the concrete of his basement, under the cement of his basement. So the next
very
day,
much like the Tales of Terror, the Vincent Price and one about his wife being behind a brick wall kills her.
Oh yeah.
With
right.
Peter Lorre, that's it. Always
Peter
drunk
Lorre,
all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Oh God, yeah. That is yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then the next day, Emma's brother Dave visits Martin, and he's wondering where Emma is. So Martin, he sits with him and he's talking to him, but he's very nervous. And he rushes him out of the house, and then Dave sneaks into the basement through the window down at the bottom. And he sees the wet cement where his sister's buried. And he's examining the area, and while he's examining it, the wax figure of the axe-wielding Hicks, Albert W. Hicks, watches him. Dave looks up in horror as Hicks' axe comes comes down and strikes him in the head. So then Martin comes down later and finds the carnage left by Hicks. So he yells at Hicks, and he gives him a bunch of crap. And once
and a piece
again,
of wood was laying by him, too, from the ass.
That's right. That's right. And once again, he hides the evidence. He buries him in the concrete. You know, he's going to have a lot of stuff under that basement floor. So several weeks later, and this is the sad part, several weeks later, Mr. Ferguson comes to visit Martin. And very happily, Mr. Ferguson tells Martin that the figures have been sold to the legendary Marchand's Wax Museum in Brussels. So, you know, Martin, he's forced to give up the wax figures that he, you know, he has cared for and loved. But, you know, Marchand's in Brussels wants them. So he's disappointed, but he goes upstairs and he makes some tea to celebrate the fact that the figures are going to be spared and taken care of. So meanwhile, Mr. Ferguson, he's measuring and examining the figures. And while he's doing this, the wax figure of a rope-handling Henri Désiré Landru eyes him. And as soon as Ferguson turns around, Landru lowers the rope around his neck and strangles Ferguson to death. Martin comes downstairs carrying the tray of tea. He finds Ferguson lying lifeless on the floor. He drops the tray. He runs over to him. He starts screaming and yelling at the figures. And he tells him that they betrayed him by killing his best and only friend. Martin grabs a crowbar because he's planning to destroy them. He's planning to destroy the figures. And he looks at Landru, indicating that he'll be the first to be destroyed for killing his best friend Ferguson. The wax figures get up off their pedestals and they slowly creep towards Martin. Their faces are unmoving, but they tell him through mind messages that he was the one who murdered his wife, brother-in-law, and best friend, not them. Martin screams as the figures close in. Sometime later, at Marchand, a tour guide introduces the wax figures to a crowd of visitors. However, there's a new addition to this exhibit, a wax figure of Martin Lombard Sinescu, who is believed to have killed his wife, brother-in-law, and best friend. In fact, he is actually touted there as the most notorious killer of all. Woo! I thought this was a very creepy and scary episode. I really did. I mean, the guy loved the wax figures, even if they were psycho killers. You know, he cared for them for 30 years. They were like family to him. He couldn't bear to leave them behind. And he had to take them home. That's the way he felt. He had to take them home with him. And he wanted to continue to love and care for them there. I mean, yeah, they were psycho killers. But, you know, Martin wasn't judgmental. You know, he wasn't playing with a full deck either. But he was a great caretaker. You know, he planned.
Well, nothing says love like a boy and his wax figures.
That's right. A boy and his figure. A boy and his wax. I mean, he planned to keep him in the basement, but he was going to run the air conditioner day and night. He didn't even care how expensive that was going to be, even though his wife did. You know, he ignored her feelings. She was so scared to death of these figures, but she was concerned about the toll this was going to take on the finances and on Martin's mental well-being, but Martin didn't care. I guess a man's love for his psycho wax figures runs deep. I don't know. But these figures proceed to kill his wife, his brother-in-law, and also poor Mr. Ferguson. But Martin's loyalty to the figures wasn't reciprocated. In the end, they do away with him after he really lays into them for killing Mr. Ferguson. Because I think, overall, he cared more about Mr. Ferguson than the wife and the brother-in-law. I mean, they were best friends. I don't think he was all that close to the wife, and then the brother-in-law, I don't think he cared much for him. But, you know, of course, he's also framed for all the other murders. You know, he becomes a prominent wax figure himself, and he's then showcased in the Murderer's Row exhibit. And he was once the curator of that exhibit. So, and he's described by the new curator as the worst murder of all. But, see, I have two theories here. Now, either the wax figures committed all the murders, and Martin mysteriously and magically becomes one of them, or Martin committed the murders, but he did so under the influence of the wax figures, so they could purposely turn him into a wax member of their cozy little group. Those are my two theories. But no matter what, it's one of the eeriest episodes of the series. It's dark, scary, chilling. you know, and I realized the ending was maybe a little predictable. So, no, I wouldn't say it's really predictable, because you didn't know that he was going to become a wax figure. I didn't. The very first time I watched this episode, I was surprised by the ending. I knew, I had a feeling, I pretty much predicted they were going to kill him. But I did not predict he'd become a wax figure. So I would say it was a little predictable. You know he's going to die, but you didn't know about him turning into one of them. It was frightening. I thought it was a frightening episode. It's one of the most disturbing episodes of the series. It gives me goosebumps every time I watch it, even to this day. The story itself was credited to Charles Beaumont, but actually he was only responsible for the basic story. The teleplay was written by Jerry Saul, because due to Beaumont's failing health, he often used ghostwriters to help complete his writing commitments, and he died 4 years after this episode aired, at the age of 38 years old, sadly. Martin Balsam, though, I thought he did an excellent job of playing the obsessive curator. He sort of reminded me of Robert Duvall's character Charlie in the earlier season 4 episode Miniature, because both men were obsessed with figures that were not alive, and both men joined those figures in the end. And, you know, I mean, I know Charlie was not, I'm not sure how to describe it. I mean, Charlie was different from Martin. You know, he was very, shy and awkward.
An introvert.
An introvert. I don't think Martin was quite that way. I think he was just obsessed with the figures. But, you know, Martin Balsam, he made me sympathize with him, even though he's a nut. You know, I mean, you saw him, like, really wanting to care for these figures, but you knew he had a little bit of a screw loose. So you kind of felt sorry for him, but you knew he was nuts. And the other episode that Balsam was in was in season 1's 6mm Shrine with Ida Lupino. And he went on to appear in a lot of other TV shows and movies, countless movies. He was in Psycho, the original Psycho. But he got murdered in that movie, too, so he didn't have a lot of good luck in these. And Will Culliver played Sweet Mr. Ferguson. He was also in season 3's The Mirror. He played the dictator who was ousted by Peter Falk. So, and you really had to feel sorry for him. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong to get murdered, you know. I felt bad about that. But, you know, I love this episode. It's scary. It's what the Twilight Zone should be. So my rating for this episode is definitely a 4. Definitely a 4. So, Robert?
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I am kind of balanced on 2.5 to 3, but for this one, I kind of give it 2.5. Understand the story of obsession, and basically it was obsession with these rack figures being with them for whatever, 25, 30 years. I don't know if he just felt that there was just an obligation to take care of them or whatever. But when watching this, I felt this could have been one that was used in the Night Gallery series years down the road when Rod co-does the series. Which who was the guy that was the producer, Jack?
Of Night what? Night Gallery? Oh,
yeah.
God. You're right.
First name is Jack. I can't remember
his
last name.
Yeah, it is Jack.
Yeah.
Oh, my
Jack
God.
Ward or Jack?
No, not Jack Ward. It'll come to me.
Well, anyway, I felt this could have, it might have been reused, too, in that. I don't know if Rod reused the scripts in those Night Gallery series or not, but very much felt like it could have been. But to me, with this, I was not as thrilled. I felt there was still too much filler. It was very much a season 4 episode. I mean, it's better compared to the other ones we've seen, you know, except for a couple that we've mentioned so far. And very much the... it was sad to see the death of Mr. Ferguson, because I did really like that character. And I think that was a character that was put in the story to be a sympathetic person that you felt for. I mean, you know, the gentleman didn't do nothing wrong.
Yeah. He was like, you really had to like him, you know? It's like, I couldn't see it. Jack Laird, by the way. Jack Laird.
Okay.
He just came to me.
Jack Laird.
Yeah. Yeah, I just I couldn't see killing him off because he was a sweet guy, and I know they had to do it. They had to make, he had to get Martin so mad that he wanted to destroy them. That would do it. But boy, he was like sad. He was such a sweet little guy.
But isn't that the way that is in movies and TV series where you always have the sympathetic character, and it's always the sympathetic character that gets killed off?
Yeah. And it's the one that you like the most, so you get some emotion and you feel so bad, yeah.
But the Martin character, it was in the cards. I know you said you were surprised at the end about him being the wax figure at the end, but, I mean, the killing spree came down to either him or the wax figures.
Mm-hmm.
It was either one of them two, and you kind of figure it was Martin that maybe in the mind is, you know, it snapped to where he wasn't realizing it. And we've seen this later on also where people don't know they're committing crimes until the very end. It's something that, like I said, was in the cards. But Martin's character very much reminded me of the Norman Bates character from Psycho. You mentioned that too about Psycho. And Norman as well had an obsession, which was to protect his mother.
Right.
In the movie. And also very much he reminded me of the Forrest Gump character, and I mentioned that in Mincher, how that gentleman there also reminded us of Forrest Gump a little bit as well. One of the scenes that I like from going back to Psycho again was where he's in there in the hotel lobby or a room off to the side to Janet Lee about, you know, what his life is like, and I got the conversation right here.
Is your time so empty?
No. Well, I run the office and tend the cabins and grounds and do little errands for my mother, the ones she allows I might be capable of doing.
Do you go out with friends?
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother. You've never had an empty moment in your entire life, have you?
Only my share.
Where are you going? I didn't mean to pry.
I'm looking for a private island.
What are you running away from?
Why do you ask that?
People never run away from anything. The rain didn't last long, did it? You know what I think? I think that we're all in our private traps, clamped in them, and none of us can ever get out. We scratch and claw, but only at the air, only at each other. And for all of it, we never budge an inch.
Sometimes we deliberately step into those traps.
I was born in mine. I don't mind it anymore.
Oh, but you should. You should mind it.
Oh, I do. But I say I don't.
You know, if anyone ever talked to me the way I heard, the way she spoke to you.
And I pretty much like that little speech there that he gives when he's talking to her in the room about his obsession with, you know, protecting her. Yeah, definitely. So I was, like I said, I was so-and-so with this episode. Another movie it reminded me of was, if anybody's seen it, called Session 9, which has David Crusoe in it.
Oh, I never saw
about
that.
Yeah, that was about a group of asbestos removers working in a metal asylum, and of course madness ensues in that movie. So if anybody gets a chance to check that out, it was very much a psychological type movie. And another missed opportunity as well was this should have been in color. Very, very much mentioned that in one of the other episodes that we reviewed. It should have been in color. This one should have been in color as well.
Yeah,
I think
with the wax figures, that would have been cool. Yeah,
yep. Yeah, I think it would have added more to to me, if the story was tightened up, I felt it could have been a much better one. And as I mentioned earlier, we talked about the House of Wax in 53 with the and it, that Rod didn't do a salute to the film by having the paddleball man. And I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe it was Jack Cassidy unveiled in that movie where he's standing outside and hitting the
paddle. Oh, yeah, you're right, it was.
And also, I didn't see it in 3D, I seen it in 2D, but part of that 3D effect, because part of 3D is the depth, you can see the paddle, you see the ball still coming at you, even in 2D, which is still kind of cool. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I give it a 2.5 out of 5. Like I said, I kind of was going between that to a 3. So, but 2.5.
Okay.
And I'll put Bobby there.
Okay, well, everybody said everything that I was going to say, so that leaves me with nothing. But I will say this about it. I think really, it is creepy. And there's only 3 episodes in season 4 that I can really be enthusiastic about. He's alive in this one, and one's still coming up later. And, it's just, it's a rare event to see something in season 4 here that you can watch. I've actually seen this twice in the past week. So that's at IMDb. So that's most unusual. At IMDb, by the way, it gets an 8.2 rating, which is really quite high. And the only other Twilight Zone episodes that are that high are Time of Love at Last, which gets 8.6, and The Hitchhiker, which gets 8.3. So this is pretty pretty heady area for a Twilight Zone episode over there. People really do like it. I think what really makes it work, aside from the fact that it's creepy, is that it's a Twilight Zone episode. The one problem, aside from the length in season 4, is that there's too many stories there that don't look like they belong in Twilight Zone. It could be anywhere. They're just stories. And that, this series depends on stories being unique in that area. And this just plays right into that. From the minute it starts, it obviously plays right into it. I would disagree with Lynn, though. I would not compare it to Miniature. Miniature really bored me. Because nothing really happens there, and find that a man staring into a dollhouse is very exciting. At least something actually happens here. And it is really very creepy. The first time, I used to watch Twilight Zone, of course, in its initial run. And when this played, I was already a teenager, thank goodness, because had I been a little kid watching it, I'd have been scared the crap out of me. Because when I was little, I had a problem with being in the dark. And I like to have lights on and things like that, so I think if I had seen this, that would have ruined me forever.
Well, I didn't compare it to Miniature. I just said that the characters were similar and that they were both obsessed with objects. Yeah.
But I think this is much better. I think the thing that really makes it work is that it's played straight. And by that I mean it's not really camped up, and it could have been. Martin Balsam plays it straight. It's played as a horror story. And too many times you see things like this and they try to be cute, and they try to camp it up a little bit, and they don't do that here. They just play it for what it is, which is that it's very scary and very creepy to see a man acting this way. So I really think it's a pretty good story. As far as the length is concerned, yeah, I would agree with Robert that there are times when you wonder, do we really need to go this long? But unlike other season 4 episodes, I'm really not, I'm not irritated by it, and I'm not waiting for it to end. And so I think that's the most important thing. So something really does happen. And, it's really creepy. A lot of it is really creepy. I found, for me personally, the worst part was at the end there, where all the wax figures start coming at him. That's a pretty scary part right there. And this is in 1963. And if it had been 6 or 7 or 10 years later, some real-life serial killers could have been added to that collection. Like Charles Manson, he would have looked really good in there, the way he looked. That would have really made it even scarier to see somebody like him in there. But as it is, it's scary enough. It kind of made me laugh at the beginning when the owner of the place says, I'm selling it because they want to put a supermarket here. And I think he should have incorporated it, the Wax Museum, in the supermarket. It would have been very unique to have Jack the Ripper sell you a half a pound of ham at the deli or something. Certainly he knew how to cut things, so it might have been a very unique shopping experience. It would have been scary, but it would have been different, that's for sure. So I think that, it's a pretty good story. A half an hour at a different time would have been better, but, you know, I think to really flesh it out and to really show how hideously obsessed he had become with these wax figures, that you really kind of needed that middle section. If it had been a 22-minute story, you wouldn't have really gotten a feel for exactly how far gone he was. So I really have no problem with the length. And it's pretty good. And as Lynn already mentioned, Martin Balsam, of course, was in Psycho, where he met a bad end at the hands of another lunatic. So he really never managed to stay away from people who could do him in. I think it's pretty good. I gave it a 3. I don't know that I'd give it a 4 like Lynn did, but I might go 3, 3.5. It's really a pretty good episode, and I wish the rest of them, or most of them, were as interesting as this one was, or I wouldn't dread what we've got to do yet, including our next one. So yeah, it's pretty good. I would go with a 3. It's worth watching, and it's a good one. Lynn?
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, follow that. I agree really with most of what people have said. Of course, season 4, episode 115, first aired the 4th of April, 1963, just for the people listening to the audio later. I think the one reason why it was so watchable, as has been said, Martin Balsam, it sounds strange to say it, but he played a sort of likable character. You know, your sympathies were a little bit with him to start with, at least, because, you know, you felt as though he was trying to preserve something. I mean, you knew he was obsessive. You knew he tipped over the edge, as it were, between, you know, having a care and a passion for what he saw as works of art and something that needed to be preserved, into, you know, an ever more strained and a person that was really falling apart in sense of the mental way, which of course that falling of his mind is what leaves you with that dilemma towards the end of whether he did, in actual, even though we saw him making the cups of tea, a lovely little cut to the kettle steaming away there as covering one screen, but whether, you know, what we were being shown is actually how it happened, are his recollection of it. Quite a few little things to point out. The lady who played his wife, Maggie Mahoney, or whatever it is, of course, her real name, Margaret Field, the mother of Sally Field, the actress. So I thought that was interesting to note. The time you really began to realise that this guy was losing it with, you know, he's got all the boxes delivered and this, that, and the other, and he sends his wife off shopping or something. He says, leave me to my friends. I mean, you know, it really was strange. Because I got taken out, I'm sure Robert did, although he didn't mention it, when we found out that one of the characters called Landrew, I was straight into Star Trek there with, covering what Landrew was going to do. Trying to think, I think I just had a...
The Night of Something or Another, I forget the...
Return of the Archons.
Return of the Archons. Yeah.
You had to listen to what Landrew said. It's a strange thing, of course. The first part when I was thinking, well, he's going to get, like Lynn said, I don't think I knew that obviously he was going to end badly for him. But I was thinking, like, for instance, first of all, let me address what Lynn said, and I totally agree with her. You know, he was mildly miffed that they killed his wife. And they got a reprimand for that.
Yeah.
But he went absolutely berserk when his boss got killed. You know, you're thinking, you know, what, you know, this fella's, you know, slightly off the ball here.
Yeah, but a normal person, if they saw that these figures killed anybody, they'd get rid of them, especially if it was your wife, you know, or your husband. They'd get rid of them. But no, he kept them around. Then they killed somebody else. He still kept them around.
Lynn, keep your voice down. Whisper. They might hear us. Just be careful.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mic. You know what? My mic's.
No.
My mic's too close.
The wax figures might hear us. Just.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When you're saying things bad about them, you know, just be careful. of course, he's burying his wife. He's concreting the floor, and the blooming power man comes in to read his meter. I mean, Then then he decides to lock the bloody door and put the shutters down. This guy's not totally in tune with what's happening. I think, and Martin Balsam, I remember again, mentioned it before, another one of our cast of 12 Angry Men. But I thought he played it. I almost got an Ernest Borgnine sort of vibe from him. The way
Marty type thing.
Marty, right. Yeah. What else? Before I knew how it was going to end, as soon as he noticed the blood, and then he noticed the blood on the knife, and he takes the knife out of the waxwork figure's hand and washes it. But of course, his fingerprints are now all over the hilt. So I'm thinking the way they're going to go with this is, he's going to plead that the wax dummies did it, and then you're going to be in a courtroom, and the lawyer's going to say, and your fingerprints are all over the dagger. You know what I mean? So.
And he's going to be convicted for everything. Right?
Yeah, so he's going to be convicted for that. Now, the one thing, was it a sad ending? That's the point. Because you also felt that this guy was really not envious of them as being having been murderers, but he was almost envious of them of their life. Let's face it, they were buffed up and dressed up and cleaned. I mean, they were weighted on hand and foot. You almost felt, and I thought almost they might have done, when they at the end they showed the close-up of him as one of the exhibit, I almost thought they might just show him breaking into a smile, as though, I've joined the club. You almost felt as though he wouldn't be that actually upset with it. What else? I think that's pretty much all I wanted to say. I agree, it was overly long. I'm not sure whether I should give it a 4. The fact that it was a long episode, that detracts from it. But it was certainly well acted. The guy played it completely straight. The supporting actors, did their job. And it certainly was it changed on a bit of a dime when suddenly you actually did. Because, they'd gone so long without you seeing these figures move that you thought, well, are they going to play that card? Are they going to play that card? And then when they did play it was quite a shock and quite frightening. So I think it could have been a 4. Maybe the fact that there was some filler, as Robert said.
Do you think it could have worked in a half an hour, though? I'm not sure they could have done that in a half an hour.
That's one of the issues with many, many of the Twilight Zone episodes.
Well, that's
45 minutes, I think, would have worked.
Extra time to show how obsessed he's become.
But what I mean is, if anybody here, and I think most of us have done, and have enjoyed, short story collections, you buy a short story, a book of collections, you'll have some stories that are 5 pages long, some are 25 pages long, maybe going up towards a small novella of 45 pages. In other words, one of the great things about short stories is, the story's as long as it needs to tell the story, but of course Twilight Zone has to be either squashed into that 20, let's face it, 22, 23 minute slot of the half hour program, or in this 50 minute, in actual fact, 50 minute running time, because is it?
It's 42 minutes, yeah. Isn't it 42?
That sounds more like it, yeah. And of course, without having 2 lots of credits, it's slightly more than double, because you're getting, in an episode that lasts that long, you're only getting 2 minutes of credit. You're not getting twice as many credits, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I enjoyed it. It could have been shorter, but they're done either way, aren't they? They either have to have a half an hour or an hour, and not many short stories neatly fit into either of those two categories. So
right.
I'm going to split it down the middle, say 3.5, Lynn.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Well, because I think this episode, even though I agree that there was some filler in it, I don't think he could have done it in a half an hour. And they had to stretch it. Yeah, they had to stretch it out, but you had to throw some filler in just to make sure that it filled the slot. So, I think it worked okay within the hour slot.
Well, Lynn, we always made a comment on these past shows that we've done. I mean, we've always said that some of these 22, even these 22-minute episodes could have been stretched out into an hour to have
yeah.
it.
Yeah, there were some,
know,
yeah. Yeah, there were some that would have worked in that one. Absolutely. Lou, what do you have to say, my friend?
All right, well, in terms of length, I guess it's always tricky to try to write an episode to fit a predetermined amount of length. And I agree that the episode was a little long, especially in the beginning. The whole scene, the museum, where they're both talking about him selling the museum and then coming up with all kinds of reasons, you know, to save the museum or to save the exhibits. It does drag on a little long. I remember thinking when I was watching that part of the episode that it wasn't really, you know, captivating me. When he brings the exhibits home, the wax figures home, you know, the episode starts to really pick up pace after the first murder. And I think what really is the strength of this episode is its subjectivity. And by that I mean, you know, I think throughout the episode, and even to the end, we're never really sure whose point of view we're watching. Is it really objective? Are we watching what's happening? Or are we watching this episode from the view of the Martin Balsam character? Because I really do believe, to a certain degree, that may have just been him alone who did it. But somehow he imagined these killers having done it. And therefore, what they showed us was kind of subjective. I mean, it jumped back and forth. Because the first two murders, we never really see the figures do anything. At least from what I remember. We do see the Jack the Ripper move the knife. But I also thought that maybe she had pressed that switch that he had pressed
yeah,
in the museum.
Yeah, that was left.
So that's kind of left up in the air. And then with the axe, we don't really see it. We see him react, and we're thinking, well, Martin Balsam's not there, so it might have been. But we never see it. The only time we actually do see is when the man with the garrote actually moves. And I remember when I saw that scene, I went like, oh, wow. So I guess this is really the figures that are doing it. But then at the end of the episode, when the figures start accusing him of being the murderer, I think it flipped back to this whole subjective point of view of maybe it was Martin Balsam who did it. Maybe the fact that they killed the museum owner was a level of guilt that Martin Balsam couldn't accept. And, you know, part of the reason I have these kind of theories is there was this movie called The Hand. It came out in 1980. It was like Oliver Stone's first movie.
Oh, really?
And if you're not familiar with the plot, basically the plot is Martin King's a comic book illustrator, and then he loses his drawing hand in like a car accident. And then from then on out, it seems like they never find the hand. So then it seems like this dismembered hand is going around killing people that make Michael Caine's character upset. But then it's played in such a subjective point of view that we're not sure whether or not this is Michael Caine who's doing it, or if there's really this dismembered hand running around committing these murders.
I never saw that.
You never saw it, or you saw it?
I never saw it. No.
It's actually not a bad film, and it plays with this kind of subjective point of view throughout. I mean, there are times where in some ways, some people consider it campy, and the way the movie ends is very, it just once again throws it up into the air whether or not, you know, they believe in this one, in The Hand, Michael Caine's character, they think he's the one who did the murders, but then at the end there's this subsequent murder, and once again it's thrown up into the air whether or not this hand did it or whether it was Michael Caine, and it kind of ends it there. And I think this episode kind of follows that kind of same point of thought. It's kind of like, I mean, in some ways Psycho is a good example too, because Norman Bates has like this dual personality, and with the Martin Balsam character he has like this double personality. It's him and then it's the wax figures. But, you know, maybe part of the reason why he has to save the wax figures is because if he doesn't, it's kind of like he's not saving himself. And even he goes through a whole explanation, well, I can't say it was you, they'll put me in jail. So I'm sorry that I have to bury you, wife. And she didn't like he didn't like the brother, so that wasn't too far gone. But like I said, it's just like, and the thing is that every time, each of those characters kind of threatened his relationship with these figures. I mean, she was going to turn off the air conditioner, and the brother was going to, actually, I'm not sure what the brother was going to do, but the museum owner...
He was
going to
expose him. He was going to expose him.
And the museum owner was going to sell the figures, so all of these were threatening his relationship with the figures. So, you know, I mean, admittedly, the ending also kind of throws it out of whack, because did the wax figures kill him, or did he kill himself out of guilt? I mean, you know, then is that real? Did they create a wax figure of the Martin Balzan character, or did they just find it? I mean,
that's the point, not whether they killed him, but how he became
But they never explain it. They never explain it. I mean,
no.
They say, well, he was this mess. You know, he killed these three people under these gruesome circumstances, but they never say whether or not they made the figure, if they... I mean, I think they would have thought that they made it. I think it would have been quite a point of view if someone said, well, we just found this wax figure of this guy, and guess what? He was a murderer, too. I mean, you know, it's kind of weird that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said, I think that's what gives this episode its strength, is kind of the subjective point of view of whether or not Martin Balzan did it or not. You know, the first 20 minutes, I was a little bored. After the first murder, it becomes kind of... the action starts ramping up, the creepiness starts ramping up. You know, you're wondering what exactly is going on, and it keeps you engaged up until the end. And even at the end, it kind of leaves it, for me, open-ended as to what happened. And it does kind of remind me of Psycho with Norman Bates. You know, we never find out that Norman Bates is the one who's doing the killing. We think it's the mother. And then at the end, with the big reveal and the whole idea of this schizophrenic personality, this double personality... You know, I mean, this episode had echoes of that. So for the week beginning, I kind of lower my score. I think I give it like a 3.5 stars. It's just after that, after the mystery started and started, you know, moving forward, I really found it engaging and interesting, and also reminded me of that previous movie. So for me, I think I'm going to give it like... Say that again?
Go ahead and finish.
I'm just giving it 3.5 stars because the last 2/3 of it was really engaging, and I just found it really interesting. And Martin Balzan's acting was really, really good. I mean,
it was creepy. It was a creepy episode.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I just wonder. I like episodes that make me think and just wonder about what the possibility is, and kind of sometimes leave you with a little question mark as to what exactly did we see here.
Yeah, and like I said, if you have wax figures in your house, and you know you have a wife or a husband, and the wax figures decide to kill the person, you get rid of them. You don't keep them around.
Well, like I said, but you know, I mean, Norman kept his mother around. Imagine if he never kept his mother up in the window. No one would ever see her up there and go like, "Hey, there's this lady up in the house."
That's true. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, Lou. You were talking about the Michael Caine movie. I do remember that a long time ago since I saw it, but there were some other ones where hands were involved. You remember the one called Idle Hands?
I do remember that movie. But that was supposed to be the hand, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. That was doing...
I mean, that's
killing.
A little bit like Army of Darkness with the...
Wasn't it a Peter Lorre one, the Beast with Five Fingers or something? The pianist one.
That one I'm not aware of.
And, of course, Jessica Alba was in a remake of The Eye, where she gets an eye from somebody else, and that starts taking her over.
There was an old black and white movie, and I don't remember the title of it, but it aired on Mystery Science Theater 3000 time ago. And it was about an astronaut that explodes his spacecraft, and it's about the astronaut's hand that... was still alive, going around killing people.
I don't remember that one either.
You know, I will say this, that if you do want to see the hand, it's actually, I think you can see it in its entirety on YouTube. There are actually a lot of
Movies
you can find on YouTube in their entirety.
Oh, cool. I think I'll watch it then.
Yeah, that's actually fun. It's
young Michael Caine.
It was 1980s. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ending, I don't remember the cast. I remember Vivica Lindfors was in at the end. She's like the psychiatrist who was talking with him at the end. But that's about it. I just thought it was funny that Vivica Lindfors was in it. Oh, look, it's Vivica Lindfors. Okay.
That's cool.
Oh, Dave, that also brings up a point for you on Doctor Who about the Autons, don't it?
Indeed. But don't forget the thing that I try and do, and I think everybody else here does, is that, you know, because sometimes we say, oh, this Twilight Zone episode, it's an old story, it's been done to death. Because when these went out in 1963, they hadn't been done to death.
No.
They were quite avant-garde, and it's been done to death since. So I think that's something you have to try and
keep in mind when you watch some of these things.
Exactly. I was watching this episode. I was like, oh, my gosh, the hand stole the plot from this episode is what I thought as I was watching it. I was like, wow. I had thought it was such an original concept to create the subjective point of view, and then you find out that the Twilight Zone had done it like 20 years earlier.
Wow. Well, it looks like across the board we have some pretty good ratings. So we've got everything from 3 to, well, Bobby said he was going to raise it to 3.5, so we've got 3.5 to 4. So that's pretty good. For a season 4 episode, I think that's pretty good. That's some of the highest ratings we've gotten. And I do think it was a very scary, one of the most zone-like episodes for season 4. And definitely worth watching more than once. I enjoyed it. And I guess that leaves us with 2 weeks from now. 2 weeks from now on the 21st, we're going to be talking about, what is the episode? Oh, of late, I think of Cliffordville.
Cliffordville. Yeah, Julian.
I think I have to be out of the country that day.
Yeah. Oh, that's really not that bad. It's really not. I mean, it's not great, but it's not that bad. I didn't mind it that much. And it's got Albert Salmi, who to me is always, he was an excellent actor, died way too young, but excellent actor. He's been in, I think this is his third Twilight Zone episode, I think. Second or third. I think third. But, he's great. And he's always good to watch. I mean, even if the episode isn't great, I enjoy watching him. So that'll be on Saturday the 21st. And, Felix, I hope you'll be here again. Hey, Felix, oh, you gave it a 3. I was going to ask you what you rated it. You gave it a 3. Oh, because he's tired of wax figure stories. Well, that's okay, Felix. I'm glad. It's still a good rating. Felix,
point should be given to the actors for standing still so well.
Oh, that's something I wanted to bring up. And I don't know if anyone noticed it. And I noticed it. If you watch the very beginning of this episode, and you watch when Martin's bringing the people through the museum, right when he stands up in front of, I think it's Hicks, the guy who's wearing the cap, he stands up in the museum. He's got the people coming through, and he stands up and scares them. He just comes out of nowhere. The wax figure blinks. The wax figure blinks, and you have to really watch where it's right in the beginning. He's giving the tour. He's bringing the people through. I don't know if he's bringing them through or somebody else's, but he, all of a sudden he stands up, and the guy with the cap on blinks, and you have to look real quick. And he does. I watched it 3 times to make sure. I kept back. I kept going back and watching it, and I watched it 3 different times. And he does. He blinks. I think that's really cool when you see them move.
Be careful, Dave. Don't blink.
Don't blink.
Yeah. I'm just thinking Linda would be more. I think Linda would be more worried if she watched it sometimes and he blinks and other times he didn't. It'd be more worrying.
Well, I mean, yeah, I had to go back 3 different times just to make sure I was right. But he blinks. He does blink. So, you know, that's kind of cool. But anyway, yeah, 2 weeks from now. Of late, I think of Cliffordville. Albert saw me, and I hope Felix will be here, and I hope Rick makes it. I hope Rick makes it next week. We haven't seen him for a couple of shows. So I hope everyone else has a great rest of the weekend.
Don't blink. Don't even blink. Blink and you're dead.
Just remember that.
Yeah.
Hey, our next show is going to be 4 days before Christmas, too. So,
I have to pick some Christmas music up.
Yeah, pick some Christmas music. It'll be 4 days before Christmas, so, you know, that'll be a festive show for us. Make sure you have some Christmas music. Maybe some Christmas music.
I'll bring the dogs out for you, Lynn.
Oh, Rick has to be here. Maybe Daphne can bark that, what is that? Is that Jingle Bells? The dogs?
Mm-hmm.
The barking dogs. Yeah, Daphne can sing for us. Yeah. Woof, woof, woof. Woof, woof, woof. Yeah. That'd be cool. All right, everybody. Well, this was fun, and I look forward to seeing everybody here in 2 weeks. Have a great rest of the weekend, folks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We'll go out on the for the next show here.
Next on Twilight Zone, a trip back into time. With Albert Salmi, John Anderson, and guest star Julie Newmar. But this trip is an offbeat, very adventuresome, and totally unexpected itinerary. It's called Of Late I Think of Cliffordville.
You send me back in time. Send me back to Cliffordville. But I want to look exactly as I did then. That's number one.
Agreed.
Number two, I want to have a memory of everything that's occurred in the last 50 years. I don't want that memory impaired one bit.
Check again, Mr. Feathersmith.
Want it to happen right away.
Cliffordville. This stop is Cliffordville.
Clifford? The devil you say?